It is the Lum Dub Cast. I'm Johnny. He's George. So much to talk about. So much basketball things to commiserate over and to celebrate. You know, we got some things with Michigan we'll get into. Improvements to the Woody. NCAA rule changes. Let's start with what I kind of just alluded to with men's basketball, because there's a lot of moving parts here, a lot of things I need to talk about and get into. And right after we finished recording last week, Ohio State, we're like, oh, all right, what's the Deeb show going to do? What's the next thing that they're going to
the Deeb know? Show?
The is Deeb
that,
show.
Is that what we're going with for this regime?
No, we're not going with that. Forward? That's terrible. We're not going to do that. That's stupid. No, that's dumb. But Aaron Bradshaw was added from Kentucky. You get a huge guy in Bradshaw, and by huge, I mean like literally large, 7 foot one. Yeah,
like 12
one.
Hours after we were lamenting last week, Mr. Diebler still has to prove himself in the portal, getting talent that isn't already aligned with Ohio State.
And then he immediately did that.
The
and,
former you know, number four overall recruit in the last year's class.
Right, right. And you know what? And Bradshaw is a good get, a really good get from Kentucky. Number four overall recruit in 2023 class, number one center. You know, he didn't have a ton of time at Kentucky, but in terms of like playing time, you know, per game, but he was super impactful when he was in the game. So you're like, all right, this dude, you know, I mean, he's got a lot of different skills. He's, you know, can add some size, be a, you know, a force in the middle. You partner him with Okpara, and you got a pretty crazy front court. And then you're like, oh, okay. So, well, we know that we're set there because Okpara put out a social media post on the 1st of April. That's interesting.
The most trustworthy of all news breaking days.
That's right, exactly. And said that he was set for Ohio State and everything was good to go. And then he decides that, no, in fact,
3 weeks later.
Yeah, 3 weeks later. That's right. We do the SpongeBob transition and he's out. And so, you know, what you thought was a set front court, you're like, all right, we're done. That's it. Diebler's got it good to go. That is no longer the case. So Ohio State is going to be in the market for some more size in the front. And you know, that doesn't mean that there aren't other moves happening. Micah Parrish was added from San Diego. That's a big deal. Micah Parrish is I think, going to be looked at as more of a defensive guy than anything else. Really, like, you know, 1.2 steals per contest per game last season. Not a lot of points, but he's going to be one of those guys that gives you some depth, particularly, you know, like towards the end of halves, and especially if guys are getting into you know, foul trouble and things like that. But you need outside shooting. You need a big. And I guess my question to you, George, is we talked about this, you know, in the past few weeks here about there's a difference between being a really good coach and being somebody who's really good at managing a program. Do you think that this would have happened regardless of who the, you know, the incoming coach was after Holtman? Or do you think this is a Diebler specific thing that's going on right now?
That's difficult to say. I wonder, like, because even though we're seeing a lot of these players kind of defect now, you also kind of get the feeling that based on how the season ended and the like respect that Diebler had gotten from that locker room in order to help that team turn it around towards the end of the season, I mean, if they had like balked at that success and went out and gotten someone like Dusty May or John Calipari, you wonder how the players would have responded to someone who had been their guy being disrespected like that and told that they probably need to go get a job somewhere else.
Right.
Like, who's to say that Bruce Thornton would have responded to that positively?
Yeah, I mean, I think the concern that people have is that you lose Zed, Rydegale's out, Okpara is now out. So those are three huge pieces of your team that you no longer have. What I would say, and I'm kind of with you, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, you run that risk regardless, right? Like, it doesn't matter who you hire and how it shakes out. I mean, that's anytime there's a coaching transition, you're going to see some difficulty when it comes to that. And a lot of people are going to draw these conclusions to Michigan and what's going on. And Michigan's been getting some transfers and whatnot as you know, Dusty May tries to rebuild that program. But it should also be pointed out that they lost their best player from last season in the transfer portal before all of this happened. And I don't think he's coming back. So, you know, it's part of this attrition is, I think, just a natural part of it. And as much as we've been kind of skeptical of Diebler, I don't know that that's necessarily, I don't know that, you know, these guys transferring out, I don't know that's really on him so much. I don't think that's a sign that he isn't, you know, prepared for the job or something like that. I think, you know, if there's any indication of that, that'll come in the months and months and years and seasons down the line here. I don't think you can really make that determination in, you know, in April.
Yeah, I wouldn't say so either. But it's like I said, there's some players that are sticking around that you feel good about. Like, I think Thornton staying was probably the most important out of any of these guys. And him leaving would have been a much bigger red flag than I think anybody else. You know, Okparo was committed to sticking around until they went out and got somebody that was legitimately going to threaten his very entrenched position on the team. So between that and, you know, whatever other NIL speculation elsewhere may be out there in wake of him maybe being lured away after the Bradshaw news broke. I mean, there's various factors in play there that probably didn't necessarily factor into who was going to end up being Ohio State's head coach at the end of the season. I've been critical of Gale. I did not really enjoy watching him play basketball for this team the past season. The guy would consistently find ways to barrel into the lane from his left and creatively turn the ball over. And regressed substantially in 3-point shooting from being, I think, a 42% shooter the season prior to only 29%. This season, which I actually think is only slightly better than what Aaron Bradshaw shot at Kentucky from distance himself. So I think that there's actually potential, unless he has some sort of spectacular rebound, for him to kind of poison pill the first year of the rebuild in Michigan if he does end up there. So I wouldn't necessarily be super upset to see him wind up there. And I think that the fact that Diebler was able to kind of turn him into Michi Johnson is actually something that bodes very well for this team, even if Michi doesn't necessarily fill the void of 3-point shooting from the guard position that was kind of created from Gale's descent in that area the previous season. The bigger thing that bothered me from day one was Scotty Middleton opting out. And I think it's interesting that we're now about a month removed from Middleton announcing he was going to go into the portal. And even with all this swirling activity, we're about, I think the final day of the portal is May 1st, if I'm right about that. So we're, you know, like 10 days, a week and a half into the final stretch here. And we haven't seen Middleton commit to going elsewhere yet. And there's an obvious need for not only the size that he could potentially bring to the wing spot for this team now, but also he was the second best perimeter shooter on the team during the run of success that Diebler had behind Jameson Battle this past season. So I wonder if he's kind of reassessed where the team that he is currently on is at heading into next year. And given the talent that Diebler has been able to attract in his first offseason as head coach, if maybe he's somewhat reconsidering his decision to jump into the portal and maybe coming back to give it another go at Ohio State. Because if he does come back, I think he immediately fills a lot of needs for this team that right now they don't have a lot of clear solutions to from going elsewhere in the portal. So that's still a big question mark. I would feel a lot better about the trajectory for this team next season if Middleton does come back. And I think that kind of speaks to the precarious situation that evaluating Diebler's offseason at Ohio State is in right now, because that's not only, you know, him avoiding having one of his outgoing players leave, but it also helps address some questions that he was going to have to figure out anyway, regardless of what portal talent that they went out and got. And if things stay the way that they are right now, I think that you kind of have to view the initial offseason for Diebler as a net loss relative to just considering the talent that was eligible to play next season. But if he's able to flip Middleton back on the team, I feel very, very good about their trajectory, regardless of the fact that they just lost Okpara, that Zedki is now leaving for Dayton, that they still are kind of going to have to address big man depth behind Bradshaw, who still hasn't played a game in a Buckeye uniform. Mm-hmm. I still feel good about the talent that they have overall, kind of just hinging on whether or not they're able to get this one guy. And I think that that would also speak to something interesting relative to, I mean, it's one thing to retain the talent that you have, but in this era where the players are so empowered and every one of them is basically on a 1-year deal with a player option, to talk a guy into coming back that has previously wanted to leave, I think would say a lot about like Diebler's sway as a head coach. So I think 1-year
deal with a player option is probably the best way to describe like all
it's
of
the
this.
Era
that's
we're
exactly
in,
what
man.
That is. That's exactly right though. I think that's perfect. And you know, and
again, that's highly speculative, but
yeah.
You know,
but
we'll
I understand what you're saying
what
though, right?
Tells.
Like there's a lot of what ifs and there's still opportunities for Diebler to kind of you know, put a stamp on this and I don't want to say like turn it around, but like structure his team, his personnel, his player personnel in such a way that it is advantageous for him. Now there's still some targets that are going to go after. Trey Townsend is probably the biggest one right now. He's a wing out of Oakland. You might remember his name because he, you know, in the last season's opener, he put up 17 points against Ohio State. And then, you know, he's been a consistent scorer for them. He's not a 3-point shooter. He's not a guy who's going to give you a lot of outside presence, but he is a guy who's going to give you scoring. So if that's a situation where like, oh, we don't got Middleton or anything like that, I think that would be a really good pickup for Ohio State. Tucker Anderson was another one that we talked about on the site. He is a wing who's going to be a guy who will give you those 3-point attempts. Central Arkansas, it's like, okay, you know, that's it's kind of cool that someone like that can command that kind of attention in the transfer portal. Like those are the things that we don't always talk about where it's like, oh man, you know, all these guys are going from there. And I will say, you know, some people wring their hands about the Central Arkansas of the world not being able to hold on to talent. But I also think that this whole thing kind of lays bare the fact that nobody actually cares about that. Like, I'm sure Central Arkansas basketball fans are super PO'd if Tucker Anderson leaves, but there are so few people in the, you know, in the college basketball ecosystem.
I mean, we have to savor our perspective in saying that as Ohio State fans.
Sure.
Because, you know, on the Central Arkansas edition of the Dubcast, they are,
right,
you know,
right.
They're bawling their eyes out.
What I'm saying, George, what I'm saying is that I don't think college sports fans at large are like, oh God, I feel so bad for them. Like nobody actually feels bad unless you're again, a Central Arkansas fan.
Yeah. But again, that's a very it's not just like there's one Central Arkansas. There's a ton of mid majors and smaller schools that you know, trying to build up a program, you need year over year talent and not just,
no, I agree.
The sort of drain effect that the portal,
right.
And the NIL.
I'm just saying nobody's asking their team not to get these guys, right? Nobody's saying like, no, let's keep all the talent and, you know, here.
I would like to think that the average college sports fan has a greater heart for the little guy than what you're letting on.
I disagree. I think everybody is cutthroat and they don't care.
You are
they would burn every mid major if it meant that they could win one championship. That's a come to the dark side. All right.
Sneering,
so anyway,
imperialist, to use a Fallout term.
There you go. That's right. It's the enclave. Actually, really, if you think about it, Ohio State's like the most enclave kind of team you can possibly imagine. Actually, maybe more accurate is to just say we're like Mr. House, like we're just ruling over this insane, you know, crazy wasteland.
I don't know about that, but death is a preferable alternative to communism.
Okay, so that's what's going on with basketball. There's going to be more movement, obviously. We'll talk about that. I did want to briefly get into, and by briefly, I don't, you know, we kind of run it down a little bit. Talking about the NFL draft that is coming up, and you know, it's approaching very soon. What does it start, like this Thursday, I think?
Yeah. Right?
Is that correct?
Next Thursday.
So right now, if you're looking at the mock drafts, most of them think that Ohio State's really only going to get like one guy in the first round. So obviously that's going to be Marvin Harrison Jr. And I, you know, fourth or fifth pick, it looks like the first three guys off the board are going to be quarterbacks. It kind of seems like the whole JJ McCarthy thing is real, which is,
oh, I'm going to be sick if that happens.
I'm not necessarily going to be sick because I don't think he's going to be a very good NFL quarterback.
Marvin Harrison Jr.
I think that's stupid, but you know, the hubris involved would be really funny because Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be, you know, a perennial 1,000 yard pass catcher in the NFL. And JJ McCarthy is probably going to, like, I don't know. I think he's going to throw like 20 interceptions.
If he goes in the top three, I just hope that he goes to Washington because he'll befall the same fate as Dwayne Haskins and every other quarterback project through that town.
People are saying that the Cardinals might try to make a move. I don't know. We'll see. Who knows?
It seems like the Cardinals are the team most likely to take Marv, I think, actually.
Yeah. So that's the thing. So that's the weird thing about it, because some people are saying they're like playing like some kind of like super secret mind game. But I don't think that's the case. I actually agree that probably seems to be the most likely landing spot for Marv. Some people think it might be the Bills trading up, or maybe the Chargers get to play for Coach Harbaugh.
God forbid.
And LA.
It's not enough that Jim is going to sabotage the whatever remains of the career of J.K. Dobbins. He's going to install Marv into a pair and a spare running back offense.
That's right.
His career out.
He's only going to get 200 yards receiving, but damn it, he's going to be the best blocking wide receiver in the NFL. That would suck.
What I really hope happens is that the Chargers deal Herbert and then select McCarthy.
Yes. And then some people are saying they'd do that, but I actually feel like, I don't know. Well, Jim is just like that dumb and that romantic enough to try to do something like that. I mean, he's the guy who actually followed through on his national championship tattoo, as opposed to Urban Meyer, who did.
He has to get everybody that flew the coop from all the Michigan scandals under one roof so that he knows that they'll all keep their yap right. Shut.
Omerta, the Omerta of the Los Angeles Chargers. Marv's going in the top five somewhere. We'll see how that all shakes out. I hope somebody does something stupid and we can laugh at it, but you know, whatever. Mike Hall is the next guy up, and he's typically being projected somewhere in the middle to the end of the second round. Some people have got him in the third round. Bunch of different teams might end up taking him.
Crazy because he was like a fourth round pick before the combine, and to Ohio State Pro Day to Senior Bowl, he just kept getting rave reviews, and now he's I think last time we talked about him, he wasn't even projected to be a second round pick, and now he's cracked the middle. That's great to see.
Yeah, people love him. His athleticism is really great. He had a great 40 time. You know, people are all about that dude, his physical skills, which is great. Yeah, I think that's awesome. Cade Stover is a really interesting one. You got to block in the NFL. Like you have to block. You have to know how to do that. On the other hand, a lot of people are saying, all right, well, the Texans are going to take a flyer on this dude and, hook him up with CJ Stroud. The thing is, Cade is legitimately a very, like, I think he has NFL level skills as a pass catcher. I think he can do that at a very, very high level. I don't know what that looks like when teams don't have to believe that you're going to block anybody. You know what I mean? Like, it's that changes everything in the NFL. You can't cover that up. You can't fool a defense and going like, oh, maybe he's going to be a blocker. Maybe he's going to like release. Like, they know what's going
to
happen.
And I mean, I wonder how much of his stock is just tied to the interesting residual effect that has been on other like Ohio State tight ends in the NFL that like haven't necessarily ever been starting caliber, but many but in recent like years have just kind of... Well, not even that. They just kind of are proven to be good team guys, and they hang around on rosters for a long time, like Nick Vinette. Mm-hmm. Or I don't even think Ruckert is playing that much for the Jets, but the guy is still, you know, hanging around there for the most
part. He's had a decent career. You know, even Jake Ballard. Yeah, it's interesting to see how. Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, he was with the Giants for a while, and it's interesting to see how that plays out. I don't know. I mean, we'll see what. I think if he's taken to like the fourth round or something like that, then it's like, all right, well, this guy can catch balls. Maybe we can try to get him to block. If he's before that, then somebody thinks that they could use him in the offense somehow.
Team so captain we'll, with blue collar.
Yeah, exactly. Work somebody ethic. Bought into that. Right. He'll, no, exactly.
He'll hang around a roster as one of these locker room guys for a little bit.
Right.
That's worth a third round pick in the NFL, right?
No, it's not, but like sometimes teams think it is, and that's what's interesting.
Well, to your point, most of the people with that kind of background are typically much more equipped to be blockers at that level than Stover.
Correct.
So it's going to be interesting if, even though he fits the stereotype of what an Ohio State tight end has recently been in the NFL, since his skills don't actually translate to that. Not because he's not talented, but just because it's a different set of abilities.
Right.
It'll be interesting to see how long he sticks around relative to the Nick Vinettes and the Jake Ballards and the who's
just
another
make
one?
Him a
Jake
slot
Stoneburner,
receiver.
I think, had a nice little run too, didn't he? Like,
I mean,
there's
Jake
more
Stone,
than a few.
Jake Stoneburner is an interesting comparison because it's similar in a lot of ways in terms of like skill set. But
he was on the Dolphins for a few seasons, I think.
For a little bit. He had a cup of coffee in the NFL. Tommy Eichenberg. So I really appreciate this article that Dan put together on like the projections and stuff that I'm kind of like looking off of, because it's wild to me the discrepancy that some of these mock drafts have in terms of Eichenberg. Like, I think Eichenberg, you know, I think he can have, you know, a solid career as like maybe a backup or something in the NFL. I don't think he's ever going to be a starting linebacker. But, you know, some of these guys have him in like the mid to late third round. And then some people have him like the late fifth round. And I think the later projections are probably more likely for Eichenberg. Just and not necessarily because of any like deficiencies, but I just don't think there's anything about his game that pops off, you know, the film or anything like that. I don't think anybody's
going
to look
at his. When we talked like a month ago about our own like kind of mock idea of like what the draft was going to look like, I think I said of the major guys, Eichenberg was probably the most likely to me to experience some kind of fall. So I think it makes sense that he's projected anywhere from like mid third round all the way down to the end of the fifth based on these projections. So it wouldn't surprise me if given his, I don't want to say shortcomings as an athlete, but he's just not as
elite as some of these other guys that you would expect to get drafted.
Up until that Rose Bowl where he had 20 tackles out of necessity because it was a video game scoring kind of game.
Right.
The guy
they were throwing
a lot
down.
Of tough Borland. That's all I'll have to say about that.
Josh Proctor projects anywhere between the fifth and sixth round. Some people think Steel Chambers might get a run. I don't think he will.
I think Proctor is going to be the Buckeye steal of the draft. I think he's going to be a very who was it? Jordan Fuller that was on.
Somebody will pick him up in later rounds, and I think they'll be. Really
there was like a fifth round pick for the Rams, and ended up being like a really key defensive player for them during their second Super Bowl run. I think so. I think Proctor can fill a similar role in that respect. Yep.
Matt Jones, Chop Williams, Mayan Williams. I think. I mean, it's rough out here for the running back position. I think that's UDFA for Chop. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how this goes. We're used to watching the NFL draft and seeing, you know, dozens and dozens of Buckeyes off the board and, you know, tons of guys in the first round. And this is going to be kind of an aberration for that. Now, a lot of that is simply the the result of retaining so many guys that you didn't expect from last season. And next year, I think you're going to kind of return to form when it comes to that. But it will be
strange. It's going to be painful to see a lot of Michigan names go on that board.
Oh, my God.
They're not going to be shy about it either.
Yeah. No, oh my God, no. No, they're not going to shut up about it. Yeah, it's going to be a pain in the ass. All right, so that's some talk there about the NFL and the draft. We're going to be back next week, obviously, and talk about how it all shook out. It will be interesting to see, who ends up going where and what that looks like. Let's go ahead and do Ask Us Anything. But before we do that, we want to remind you that the Dubcast is sponsored by the Dry Goods Store at 11warriors.com. Drygoods.11warriors.com. Shirts, hats, stickers, all kinds of great stuff. Check it out. It's cool. It's really cool. By the way, I did live up to my promise. I'm wearing, I don't know if you can see it, I'm wearing the women's championship shirt.
Very nice.
Proud of that. Very excited about that. I will definitely be rocking that on a
regular
basis.
Both got our home field apparel on right now.
Okay.
Well, we got to get some dry goods swag.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, that's, you know what? I'm gonna start wearing my 11 Warriors beanie in every episode. Even in the middle of the summer.
I got a bunch of stickers on my laptop.
Let's do Ask Us Anything. Again, you can send us questions and ask us literally anything to dubcast@11warriors.com. Let's go ahead and get into it here. This is from Joshua F. I like this question. What is the most tired you have ever been?
How could you remember such a thing?
I can tell you the most tired I've ever been. Before I went to live in Japan, right? I went the whole application process for this job was like a year long, right? I applied in, I think, September of that year or the year previous. I got my interview in February and did it in early March. And then found out I got in the program in May and then left for Japan in late July. So like this whole thing was just this enormous long buildup. I didn't speak the language. I don't like flying. And, I'm literally going halfway around the world to live in a place I've never been in a rural place. Like I lived in the boonies, right? I lived in what they call the Anaka. So I was out there. And I was freaking out and I was like, man, I just want to sleep on this plane. Like, I just want to try to sleep on this freaking plane. I did not sleep for 2 days prior to this flight.
Wow.
I just didn't sleep.
Too nervous to sleep?
It's not that that was part of it. I was super nervous, but I also was just trying to sleep on the plane. I was like, can I just, for love of God, can I just like knock my, like, I just want to be out. I just want to be out and get there. I don't want to sit on this. I didn't want to be on a tin can, in a tin can for 13 and a half hours thinking about all the ways this was a terrible decision. So I just wanted to sleep and I didn't sleep for 2 days prior to this, this flight. And I took a bunch of sleep medication before I got on the plane. I did not fall asleep. Stayed awake for the entire freaking flight. I get to Japan. I'm really wired. jet lag. What's that? I didn't even know what planet I was on by that point. And I barely slept. Like I did sleep when I got to Japan, like 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah.
And we had like a seminar in Japan for a couple of days. So over the course of those couple of days, I slept maybe a total of like 5 or 6 hours.
Okay.
And so then when we took my second flight to where I was actually going to live, and I got to my apartment and checked in, and I just remember that first day in the city where I was living, I thought at any moment I could just pass out. I spent the entire, because you have to fill out all this paperwork and we had to do all this, general, whatever stuff, like application stuff and get my apartment and blah, blah, blah. And it was just a whirlwind of things I had to take care of. And I genuinely felt at any moment in time, the eyes would have just rolled in the back of my head and I would have just collapsed on the ground. Like I was really tired. My first weekend there, I just slept. I didn't. I think I probably went to bed in like Friday at like 6 o'clock whenever I rolled in. I woke up at like Sunday or something. So,
well, your story,
that's the most tired I've ever been.
Your story has inspired my answer. Okay. Because mine also has to do with trans-Pacific travel.
Oh, nice.
So I was, I was a member of the Fisher College of Biz. I got into Fisher when I was a freshman, and I did like a 2-year program during the summers where it was called like Global Lab. It was like the Fisher Global Lab. So I got to go to Italy and Ireland after my freshman year. And then I got to do my first internship in Hong Kong after my sophomore year. And so on the way, so the flight there was fine. It's like 14 hours. So I can sympathize with you saying like I wasn't able to sleep on that trip, because I don't know if I was even able to sleep on the way there, but I think I just figured out like 3 different movies I wanted to watch.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of them was Horrible Bosses, but I don't remember what the other two that I watched were.
Uh-huh.
But I remember like consciously thinking while I was over there, okay, I got to have some movies queued up for the way back. And one of them was Goodfellas. And I don't remember anything about that movie. Like, that's a very iconic gangster movie that people, like, you know, even as far back as I can remember, like, I barely even remember that. And that's the first line of the movie. I think the only other thing I remember from the movie is when he's like yelling in the shower, and I don't even remember the context for it. Jimmy or whatever. All right. So there were 50 total people, like kids from Ohio State going over to Hong Kong. 45 of them were from China. So there's only 5 Americans going back on this return flight. And I'm the only one sitting in Economy Plus. Everyone else is like going towards the back of the plane or whatever, and they're all jealous. And I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to have a nice, luxurious.
They're going into steerage.
Right.
They're the people on Titanic. They're
with the snakes.
That's right.
I'm going to have a nice, luxurious flight with a steam towel and all the fixins on my way back to America.
Economy Plus.
So I'm sitting next to this woman I don't know, and all of a sudden, this guy in fatigues comes up to me and asks me if he can sit with his wife. And it's like, all right, how do you deny that request? Like,
I'm like, absolutely not.
Now, I think it's curious that someone in the American military is flying back from Hong Kong, but you know, I'm not going to ask. I'm not going to be that guy that stands up to someone.
You don't think it's
fatigues.
A stolen valor situation? You don't think somebody's just like
it? Very easily could have been, but I'm a 20-year-old that's been in Asia for 2 months, and I'm just trying to get home in one piece.
Of course,
not trying to cause a scene.
Understandable.
So, gotcha. Like, I'm going to do the honorable thing here. You know, sit with your wife. I'll go take your seat. And the guy was in Economy Plus too. He was just in the back, like the last row of it or whatever.
Okay.
So it's like, okay,
all right. I got you.
But what I don't realize is, I can't remember if those seats can recline or not. I don't think that they were able to just because of the divider or whatever. I think they probably could because it was Economy Plus or whatever. But that's not what the big issue ended up being. The issue ended up being the guy that the dude in fatigues was originally sitting next to was the most unpleasant person I've ever sat on a plane with. This guy was like the most stereotypical, like Brooklyn slime ball dude you could imagine. Like, I mentioned I was planning to watch Goodfellas on the way home. This guy claimed that he knew Henry Hill.
Oh, of
and
course.
I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, sure, whatever, dude.
Best
but,
friends.
You know, he had the accent and everything, and he talked like this. And I'm like, oh, my God, this guy is like something out of he was literally something out of Goodfellas. It was unbelievable. He like could have been one of their grandfathers. And this guy, at first it started out actually not too bad. He had like maybe 3 or 4 mimosas before we took off even. But he ordered me one, which was very courteous. So, you know, I'm not legally old enough to drink, at least when I get back to America. I'm having a mimosa on a plane. I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool. But I know that he's had like 3 or 4 mimosas already. And then he starts taking Xanax.
Oh, great. There you go.
So I'm in the window seat, not in the aisle seat. So I'm trapped behind guy.
You have no escape.
This Brooklyn slimeball guy.
Hey, and is he doing the thing where they like kind of poke you a little bit, where they like get a little handsy?
I'm gonna get to that. But before he got handsy with me, he got handsy with the stewardesses.
Oh god.
I'm talking about like literally like pinching their butts and stuff. Like it was messed up.
Slimeball.
Oh yeah, no. That when I say this guy was a stereotype, it was like full stop. And so he's drinking and he's on Xanax, which is a hell of a combo. And I'm like, oh great. And this guy like won't stop talking. He's talking about like is how he's this art dealer in New York, but he also is like he only has like mirrors. Like that's what he sells. Like, so you're an art dealer, but your art is mirrors. Like that's how you made your fortune. And he said, like, it's the most convoluted story ever, but I'm thinking,
I just want to interrupt real quick. This is for anybody listening to this. If you get into a situation where somebody's telling you a clearly fake aspect of their lives to sound like really impressive, just ask them more questions. Because then they have to come up with increasingly detailed answers about their BS that sound even more ridiculous.
Now, that might work.
That's an opportunity.
That might work when you're not being held hostage for 14 hours in an airplane.
That's right.
When you can walk away from the situation, that's one thing.
Follow that advice when you can physically leave the situation.
Right, but I'm having to humor this caricature of a person the next 14 hours.
You're a funny guy.
I'm trapped. And so eventually, like, he has an easier time. He offered me Xanax and I declined, and I probably should have taken it because
I was about to say.
Well, it would have been easier for me to fall asleep, but I had been drinking at that point and I didn't want to be barred out Andrew because I saw the effect it had on this guy. But eventually, this guy, like, during the flight, like, it's already hard enough for me to fall asleep because this guy will just wake up and randomly start talking about total BS. But during the times that he's asleep, he's actually, like, having spasms in his sleep. And he hits me multiple times. And, like, the third time it happens, I'm like, dude, I'm going to have to, like, call the stewardesses or something to like get them to get you to move or something. You keep doing that. He's like, all right, I'm sorry. But at the same time, thing like stewardesses don't want to deal with this guy. They already deal with him before takeoff. Not. So I can't enjoy any of my movies. I can't fall asleep because I'm getting hit by this guy. And he keeps waking up to talk to me about the mirror dealing scene in the New York area. And like the most miserable flight I've ever been on by far. And I think that was probably the most tired I've ever been, because any way that I tried to make myself fall asleep in that 14-hour stretch, I just couldn't do it. It was so miserable. But every other part of my experience with the Fisher Global Lab was great, except for that. That was really bad.
And now you two are roommates. Isn't that amazing how that works out? It's just really beautiful.
I don't even remember what that guy's name is. I kind of wish I did. Just that guy's so I could name look up and verify his
was
story.
Joe Pesci.
He was as tall as Joe Pesci.
Really? That's funny.
But he could have been Joe Pesci's grandfather. Like, he was old slime ball. Let me tell you about this. Let me tell you a couple of three things, this guy. A
couple of three things about the mirror business.
About the mirrors in New York.
It's pretty good. All right.
He kept telling a bunch of stories about, like, his daughter, like, crashing his yacht and spending all his money. And it's like, oh, I wonder why she doesn't respect you.
That's why I go to a therapist.
That's why I go to Hong Kong by myself.
My Uncle Polly. I need to watch The Sopranos. I guess Polly's a character that exists. All right, this next one's from Kevin, who says, do you think Smith is good enough to start next season? Not only is he good enough to start, he will start. He's going to be one of the starting wide receivers at the end.
Yeah, that's like I've been saying. I'm fine if he wants to slide into wide receiver, too. I don't want to make him the primary target over
Luka. No, he's not going to be number one. Emeka's going to be the guy, but absolutely it's going to be he's going to be one of the starting wide receivers. I don't think you can keep him off the field. He's too good.
I think predictions of a 1,000-yard season are a little premature, though. Let's.
Well, yeah, because you don't even know who's throwing to him, right? Like, yeah, and there's going to be a ton of options. I agree with that. This one's from Joshua F. If you had to pick any TV game show, past or present, that if you got on, you could actually have a chance at winning the grand prize for, which show would you choose? In other words, like, what do you think you would be most adept at, you know, and get those big prizes.
Who Wants to Be a Millionaire used to be appointment television for my family growing up. I want to believe it's that, but I know once we start getting to those six-figure questions, I'm going to get something that totally trips me up.
It gets difficult.
So I can't say that.
Yeah, and I thought about that too, and I was like, it seems like you would do really well, and actually, this is a funny story. I don't know. She was on, I had a friend that I knew from college. She was on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Yeah.
And she only walked away with like $1,000. And she she missed a really easy question.
What was it? Do you remember?
I can't remember the exact question. It was about the Supreme Court. And it was like, I think it was literally something like, how many people are in the Supreme Court? Some incredibly easy thing like that. And I was like, dude, that's, come on. You gotta like use one of your life.
Seventh grade government. She was
really, well, the problem was that she was like super confident about her answers. She didn't use a lifeline or anything like that. And yeah. And just totally got it just wrong. And it's like,
oh no.
So I'm afraid of something like that happening to me where I just get like overconfident, like, okay, I got this until 32,000, and then I don't, and I look like an idiot. But, and like some people are like, oh, I'll go on Jeopardy. No, the problem with Jeopardy is that you're competing against two other people who are like geniuses. And a lot of times these are like, you know, people who do nothing but just study almanacs all day and know every bit of minutia about every single possible subject on the planet. You do not want to go on Jeopardy. Unless you're one of those people, you don't want to go on Jeopardy. I don't know. I feel like if I were going to do it, I would probably do something that at least I would have fun doing it. Like, I have, you know, like, I don't know, like The Amazing Race or something. I don't know. Something where I could at least enjoy the process. Like, and I know Amazing Race is like not necessarily enjoyable. It's like stressful and stuff, but like, some kind of game show, some kind of competition show where, you know, I could be there for a little bit. And if I win, that's great. But if I don't win, at least it was an interesting story and I could tell people about it. Cause you're on like, you know, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Okay. Well, yeah, I was on the show and we did the thing for like an hour and then I won $1,000. Okay. Bye. Like, that's not fun. You know, spending 6 months on a tropical island or something for Survivor, that's way more interesting to me and way more, you know, of a life story than winning $1,000 because I'm a dumbass and I don't know, like, you know, what type of, like, you know, animal echidna that or what type of animal Knuckles is from Sonic the Hedgehog. He's an echidna. So I do know. I get that one. But you know what I'm saying? Like, you want to have the experience. You want to do something fun is what I'm saying. So I would pick The Amazing Race.
What was that show that, because you just said Sonic the Hedgehog, so I'm trying to remember, who was that guy that was like a big like celebrity host on G4, and then he hosted some kind of game show on Comedy Central, but I can't remember what the name of it is.
Ben Stein. I want to be on When Ben Stein.
No, it wasn't his name like Chris something?
I don't remember.
I was going to say Chris Parnell, but that's not who it is.
Definitely not Chris Parnell. Although that would be really funny.
This is going to drive me crazy.
You'll have to look that one up because I have no frame of reference for what you're talking about.
Chris Hardwick. I think that's who it is. Yeah, Chris Hardwick.
That name sounds familiar, though.
Yeah, Chris Hardwick. And he hosted, what was the name of the show on, you probably know who he is because he hosted Talking Saul for the
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Okay,
he did Talking Bad, too. But yeah. And he did Web Soup.
Yeah, he does there those was, AMCs. Okay.
Yeah, but he there was some
looks like Aaron Paul a little bit.
Yeah, there was a show that's probably exactly why he did it. But there was some comedy game at midnight. That's what I would do. I would kill that show. That's what I would go on. I was gonna say Deal or No Deal, but at midnight is what I would choose.
I would crush that. Singled Out. He did Singled Out on MTV.
I don't know what that is.
Singled Out is maybe. I gotta tell you something. If you don't know what Singled Out is, it is like anybody who gets nostalgic for the 1990s needs to go on YouTube and watch an episode of Singled Out. It was an MTV dating show in the mid 90s, and it is the skeeziest, worst thing I can possibly imagine.
Worse everything than Next. About
it, it's actually that's
the only other MTV dating show.
Honest to God, it's actually worse than Next. It gives you the most creepy, just like I don't. It's like somebody like an ice cold hand just like running down your back, like you're gonna get stabbed or something. Everything about it is just awful, and it's the entirety of the 90s distilled into like this 22 minute package, and it's just garbage. It's just straight trash. So he hosted that. So good for him.
Do you remember At Midnight though? That was on the entire time I was in college. Okay,
I don't remember that one. But good for him. He's 52 years old. God,
it was like an internet humor quiz show. I'm it's the reason I'm the host of the Dubcast, right? I mean, I would crush it.
That's right.
Certainly isn't for my Ohio State knowledge.
Well, I mean, you know.
People are only here for the video game references.
That's right. Duh. Okay, last one here. This is from a good friend, Alvin, who simply wants to know, what are our thoughts on Caitlin Clark's WNBA salary, which I think is like $15.95 an hour or something like that. I think that's how much she's getting paid. Isn't it what is it literally?
It's like five figures, I think. I think it's like 80K or something is her first contract.
Yeah, it's like something really, 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 really low. But it's also like it's the league. It's basically the league average for rookies. Right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not terribly surprised. Like, if it shocks you at this point, I mean, I think it might be stunning to people just given the rise in media coverage that women's basketball has received in the last handful of years, and perhaps the salaries haven't necessarily caught up. To at least I think the star level that maybe some of those women have attained in recent seasons, I think that they still get paid more money to play in like Russia in the off season than they actually make from the WNBA, which is why Breonna Stewart was over there so many times.
And Brittany Griner.
Well, she was.
People are like, why? Why would she be over in Russia? It's like she's actually getting paid money. Caitlin Clark's base salary her rookie year is going to be $76,535.
Yeah. So like I said, 80K. So like right around that ballpark. No, it doesn't terribly surprise me. Now she's going to make like eight figures off of sponsorships alone.
Correct.
So there's certainly other ways for stars that have brands to make their money. Like I'm sure,
but
I think Angel Reese was like the ninth pick and she's going to the Chicago Sky. She'll make more money off sponsorships than she does off her own salary. So
can I ask you this though? Do you think that she would have made something comparable or more to that in NIL? Like let's talk about NIL as like a salary, I guess, because I know she would have made other money in endorsements and things like that in college. But if she had stayed, do you think Iowa probably could have matched that?
This is an interesting question because I have a cousin that went to USC that was asking me something similar about Juju Watkins this past week.
I feel like she.
I don't really think so. I mean, no.
You don't think so? Here's the thing, because she is
comparable to 80K. I don't think so. Maybe half of that, because again, most of the money that they're going to make at this point, I think, is more sponsorship based, which NIL permits. But in terms of getting actual payout from a school collective, I think that most schools, I think Ohio State would probably tell you the same thing. Their efforts are more squarely focused on football and basketball than giving a share of that. However they're generating the money, giving a share of that to the women's basketball program,
I mean,
potential stars.
And to your point, I mean, maybe, you know, maybe it just kind of proves that point. If she didn't come back, right? Like, then, you know, then maybe there wasn't that comparable amount of money from Iowa. I just think it's really interesting that, like, the most recognizable face in college basketball, men or women, wouldn't necessarily be able to command that NIL money. So I find that interesting, but I understand the premise. Like, it feels like if Iowa could have matched that, then she just would have stayed.
I think it is more of a scathing indictment on the infrastructure of Iowa's NIL organization than of all college sports, that Caden Proctor probably made more NIL money from Iowa than Caitlin Clark did.
Which is probably true and also insane. That's interesting. But great questions this week, and ask us anything. Please keep sending those in. We love answering them. Let's go ahead and talk about a couple other things here. Michigan gets probation. This is for the burgers. And not really the burgers, the the lying to the NCAA thing that was a result of the burgers. The thing is, a lot of people, I think, are expecting Michigan to finally, this is it. The NCAA is going to hammer them, take away their national championship, and reduce their scholarships. It's not going to happen. I am very skeptical, and I've said this before, of the NCAA coming down on the Wolverines in any real appreciable way. And yes, they still have to go over the whole Connor Stallions thing and figure out what that looks like, but I'm not expecting anything.
Well, the one thing that I think would be interesting for this, and as we were talking about in the pre-show, is it feels like there's a, if not a 50-50 split, it feels like Ohio State fans are in two camps with respect to expectations on what the outcome of the Stallions investigation is going to be. They're either going to get the book thrown at them to get made an example of, or nothing's going to happen at all. And we've both kind of defaulted into the latter just based on, you know, among other things, previous history experience. Kind of being written by the winners.
Yeah.
But what I think is interesting is with the resolution of this Burgergate case is that there is a punishment that has been firmly handed down where I think most people would objectively agree what is being alleged in the Stallions case is far more egregious and punishable misconduct than what happened with what they just received punishment for. So sure. How do you punish? So the question that will be forthcoming, I think, is the punishment that they're going to get going to be more stern than what they just received for Burgergate? Now, 3 years probation is like whatever. In the grand scheme, but it at least I think you can take some solace in the fact that if you were somebody like us that figured nothing was going to happen at all, I don't think that you can look at the case that is still being investigated and come away thinking that they're going to get off scot-free given the punishment they just received for something that has much more precedent in terms of handing out punishment and was not nearly as egregious or at least outspokenly nobody in the Big Ten was jointly campaigning on conference calls with Tony Alford to get Michigan thrown out of the Big Ten championship because of Burgergate. Want blood for what happened for the Stallions thing. Well, and so you have to think the punishment that comes from that is going to be worse than what they were just handed down for this.
Yeah, Ohio State fans want blood, and that's fine, and I get that. I don't know.
Central Michigan fans had the sanctity of their sideline violated.
No, they're still investigating what happened there. They don't know. I don't think any conclusion has been reached as to what actually happened, which is hilarious to me. I don't know how it's all going to shake out. I have very little faith in the NCAA doing, you know, anything. And speaking of the NCAA, they did do some other things that, you know, not related to actual enforcement of their own rules, but they created some new ones. Helmet communication, talking about Stallions, there you go. It's that's part of it. Helmet communication has been approved.
And no, those things have nothing to do with each other.
Yeah, that's right. That's two totally
unrelated. So I've been told.
Events. Yeah, two totally unrelated events. I do think, yeah, and I do think that the NCAA is nothing like, if not a reactive organization. You know what I mean? Like, they've never been 100%. Proactive about anything. You know what I'm saying? Like, they've never tried to be ahead of the curve on anything. And so I think they've probably been talking about helmet communication for a long time, but I also think that they're probably like, whatever, until,
well, they were piloting this in the summer, apparently, like the before this past season, before anybody right. allegedly knew who Stallions was in an infamous sense. So it is fair to say that they've at least had their eye on this before the whole scandal actually happened, but this is also an organization that is very slow to get any right. sort of legislative movement going on anything, which is just kind of the way that a lot of the legal system works in the United States, period, in terms of mm-hmm. implementing change or bringing down enforcement on whatever sort of investigation you want to call it. So it, you know, in light of the fact that, you know, there's not only that, but then also, you know, the NFL had helmet communication going back to 1994, and, you know, we're three decades later and we're finally getting it now. You right. just, it's hard for someone like me to look at where, you know, those two factors and say, it's interesting that they were so willing to push this through right now in this moment. I wonder what sort of factors could have led them to behave in such a fashion where they previously weren't showing nearly as much haste.
Right. Yeah. And I kind of agree with that. I think, like I said, the NCAA is a reactive organization. They're not proactive. They see things that happen and go, oh crap, we need to catch up. And that's, I think, part of it.
Also, CYA organization.
Also, the 2-minute warning, that sucks. I had no reason for it. There's no, I mean, obviously the reason is we need to know.
What, you don't want more commercials in your college football?
I don't, and I know that that's just explicitly the reason for it. Like, the 2-minute warning has no purpose. Like, no purpose at all. Like, I understand.
There weren't enough clock stoppages in the final 2 minutes of the game. We needed to have one more.
That's right. We needed more. It serves no purpose whatsoever in football, professional football, college football, high school. There's no reason for it. And we're going to get in college football because we got to have another freaking ad break. You know, the new rules that they instituted just didn't accommodate the advertisers enough, so now we got to do the stupid 2-minute warning. I hate that. I really, really hate that aspect of it. I'm sure
it's
some
still
people hate it.
It's still kind of a silly thing to be upset over, but in terms of symbolism with respect to like distinctions between the college and the pro game,
sure,
that was it's something that I always sort of liked, right. Like giving a 2-minute warning, you know, commercials aside, it's like you're putting an extra bit of stress on, you know, a defense facing an offense that is playing from behind. Like, mm-hmm. you're building an extra ounce of drama that you want to see professional level football players be able to overcome. Like, right. I can understand the argument for it from that perspective, and, you know, giving a little bit more rope to the college players that may not necessarily be on their P's and Q's. This though, like, it just, and as we've talked about for, like, you know, almost over a year at this point, it's just more of the blending of the lines between the college and the professional yeah. game.
And I don't think it adds anything.
It stinks to see.
I don't think anybody's going to sit here and go like, oh, wow, I'm really glad they put in that 2-minute warning, or else I wouldn't have been invested in this game emotionally. Like, this is what's causing me to care, is that extra ad break between
well, the first time it results in a game-winning drive for Ohio State, we're going to talk about how great it is. So
yeah, well, I could go on, but another couple things I want to talk about before we get out of here. Gene Smith talking about improvements to the Woody Hayes Athletic Center. You know, he's on his way out. He had a long interview, kind of talking about you know, just improvements and what they're going to do in terms of finances with football and investing more money. He talked with Doug Maurice about all of this, and you know, the Woody, you know, I've been to the Woody Hayes Athletic Center. I've been around and in it. I've been through like the locker rooms and seen the you know, like Ryan Day's office and the coaches' meeting rooms and stuff like that.
This guy.
I know. And I say all that to say that it's a weird building because it's above ground, but all of these things that I just told you about are internal to the building itself. So it feels like it's below ground. And the overall point with me telling you this is that it's in need of an upgrade. They need to figure out how to put things and arrange things in such a way that it doesn't feel like you're literally like in a bunker. So they got to work on that. I mean, if you look at some of the other things that people are building and how it does, it's much more open, you know, much more engaging. And I think they can do better with, you know, more space and a different design.
So well, correct me if I'm wrong, like. But they're conveniently located right next to another very cavernous above ground building, are they not?
Yeah, they are.
They Why don't they just hollow out the Schottenstein and make that the new Woody Hayes Athletic Center?
Just make it like some kind of like Mount Doom kind of thing and put Ross Bjork's office at the top, like this panopticon of the entirety of yeah. life. You can just like laser people.
You can see the stadium from there too.
You can. Last thing I want to say here, shout out to Kyle Snyder, former Ohio State wrestler. And I know people have mixed feelings because as a professional, he's training at Penn State, blah, blah. Look, the guy made his hay as a Buckeye. He won a lot of great matches as a Buckeye and for the Ohio State men's wrestling program. Shout out to him for making his third straight Olympic games, heading to Paris. He just beat the crap out of everybody, as he tends to do. So he's out there. That'll be fun. And it'll be interesting to see how, he kind of, I mean, you would think that this is probably his last Olympics, but who knows? I mean, that's, he may have a lot in the tank, and some of these wrestlers wrestle for a long time. So he won a gold in his first Olympics in Rio. He got a silver at the Tokyo Games in 2021 and now in Paris. We'll see how he does. I think he's definitely a contender for a medal. He's one of the best in the world, but a lot of it depends on his matchups. And if I don't know if Sagulayev is going to be there or not, but if he is, that's the roadblock for Kyle. So we'll see what happens.
And in a similar vein, congrats to Jesse Mendez for pulling off one of the biggest upsets of the Olympic trials over 100%. Yanni Diakomihalis.
Yep. Came in as like, what, 11 seed, I think? I think he was an 11 seed, and then he just rocked it. He had a couple really good matches where he pulled off the upset. So yeah, shout out to him. Shout out.
Good week for the Ohio State wrestling legacy relative to the Olympics. That's right.
And shout out to all the Olympic hopefuls, particularly Ohio State Buckeyes, who are going to be headed to the old world and Paris and hopefully bring back gold for the United States. So that's cool. So that's the Dubcast for this week. We'll be back next week to talk about the draft, of course, and pretty much anything else that you might possibly want to know about Ohio State sports. So we'll keep answering your questions for Ask Us Anything, going over all things Ohio State. And until then, I'm Johnny.
I'm George.
And we'll see you next time.
Take care, folks.